This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi everybody, sorry we're a little bit late. We had a few technical issues today with the sound, but I am really excited to be here today with another normal, in inverted commas, runner. Welcome to the Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel, live broadcast and podcast. Today we are talking to patron Lloyd Watkin. Hi Lloyd, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm good, thanks, how are you?
Good. Yes, I'm great. And I'm very impressed that you have recently completed the Marathon des Sables. So that is just fantastic. I'm guessing that you're recovering now because it was it last month or the one before?
It was at the end of April. So May, June, 2 months ago now.
2 months ago now, yeah, so a little bit recovered. But I think first of all, we should probably say, what is the Marathon des Sables for anybody who's not familiar with this race? I mean, it seems really famous to people in the trail running world, doesn't it? But maybe let's just describe it in all its gory details for somebody who's just never heard of it before.
Sure, okay. So it's a five-stage race through the Moroccan Sahara. It is completely self-sufficient, apart from a tent that you get every night, which is a glorified sheet over your head, and water. So we were supplied with roughly 12.5 liters of water a day. Other than that, you're carrying everything you need to feed yourself and survive. And then it's typically made up of roughly the first 3 days are roughly 30 kilometers a day. 35. Then there's a long day, which for us was 90 kilometers. Then a kind of joking rest day, and then a marathon to finish, and then a non-time charity stage at the end.
Amazing. So that's a long way to run, and in great heat as well, in the middle of the Sahara as well. What made you sign up to that?
I'm in my early 40s, so people of my generation will probably remember a TV program called Transworld Sport on Channel 4 many, many years ago. They used to kind of show all kinds of strange sports and sporting events all around the world. And I remember seeing these strange people running through the desert, and remember sort of being semi-inspired by that and thinking how cool it would be. And then also thinking, like, that's something I could never ever do. Roll on 30 years roughly, and I started kind of running further, and then I met some people met a very amazing person called Tom Crossland, who was doing an FKT around the coast of England and Wales. Here's gone. I joined him for a stage, and was just really inspired by what he was doing, and then kind of used that to inspire me to think, well, why can't I do those things if Tom is doing this amazing achievement as well.
Yeah, oh, it does sound really inspiring. And I remember, yeah, I'm 40 as well, so I'm remembering that Trans World Sports channel, and I watched the event racing on there, an Eco Challenge, and that's what made me want to do that, go to that side of things. So I definitely hear you on that. It's great that you've managed to get there after all these years. I'm just having some people on the live chat are just saying the sound from your end is a little bit in and out. I'm just wondering if we should turn your headphones off at all, because I think there might be a little bit of feedback on there.
Maybe let me go and sit close to the router and see if that helps a little bit.
Yeah, it could be feedback as well from using headphones. I know headphones are supposed to improve things, but yeah. Well, we'll just wait for Lloyd to relocate himself. And then we're going to ask him how he got into running in the first place, presumably after watching one of those programs. Right, he's just moving through his house.
Okay, hopefully that's a little bit better.
Cool. Okay, well, everybody, let us know if the sound from Lloyd's end is any better. He's now sitting on a nice comfy sofa, so it looks like a very... very nice place to be. So I know that you're watching the telly and you're watching Marathon des Sables on the TV. What was your journey into running and more specifically like the trail side of running and like the ultra side of things, which we cover on this channel?
Yeah, so I've gone in and out of fitness since my 20s. So I remember when I was in my early 20s doing a 5K race and it being like the most crazy challenge I'd ever done in my entire life. Raised tons of sponsorship money, things like that. And then started running further, just do half marathons and things like that. But as you might be able to tell, I'm from South Wales. I live on the side of a hill, so basically wherever I go is up a hill or downhill, and there's plenty of trails. And then I look out my windows now and there's mountains in front of me. So like trail running is just running to me rather than ending on the road. And then after the birth of my daughter 6 years ago, I kind of remember like when I was chatting to people, I would say to people that I used to do that. I used to scuba dive. I used to do OCR. And then I didn't like that feeling. I was like, I don't want to be the person that used to do stuff. I want to be the person that does stuff. So I started going out on the trails again. And then found that I was just because trails like naturally lead to, you know, when you get to uphills, you can't run, you have to walk a bit. Like that naturally helps me do stuff like running further when you do sort of hit the flats and stuff. I just sort of started running further and further, and things become you just end up running ultras and stuff like that, I guess.
It's a natural progression. Yes. Yeah, no, I know what you mean about being the person that says I used to do stuff, because having a 2.5-year-old now, I'm definitely that person now. And trying to get back into it is really tricky, I might say, at this stage. So, yeah, I can see six years down the line, yeah, might be a bit more achievable. So that's really inspirational for all of us. So let's talk. I want to ask you about the vegan runners as well. But maybe first of all, should we just ask you about your training first of all? How do you even train for a race that's so long with so many days and in the heat like that, which you don't really get in Wales?
Yeah, when I decided to sign up for it, I already ran ultramarathons, but I picked a bunch of races to help me in. Various different aspects. So I did a very long race. So I did a 100-miler this time last year across South Wales, which is amazing preparation actually, because it was an incredibly hot day and a lot of beaches. I did a lot of the X Energy races for the Druids, and did pilgrims a couple of times to get used to the multi-day side of things. And then I did one of Texas Ultra Running for long flat races, for a 40-miler with a backpack on. But other than that, most of my training is just lots of walking. I've got a Welsh sheepdog that requires a lot of exercise, so I would say 67% of my miles are just walking. So basically what I did was I started dog walking with a heavy backpack on, and then I'd do one long run a week, and then one quicker run the week. That's all I've ever done really with my ultra marathons. And then sort of a couple weeks out, bought a sauna suit, started doing my training in a sauna suit, and then straight to a hot bath afterwards. Or every time I was in the car, I'd have the heat seekers on, temperature turned up all the way, and just basically keeping myself as hot as I could.
Lovely. Sounds like a bit of torture. What is a sauna suit? What's a sauna suit? I'm sort of thinking of like, is it a wetsuit? Is it a space suit?
If you imagine buying a really cheap set of waterproofs, like the ones that you don't want to wear when you go running, like the ones you get more wet inside than you get from the rain, it's like wearing that essentially. And you get really hot inside, but also quite sweaty as well.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And how did you find that? Like, were you motivated to go out in that?
Yeah, it was fine. It looks like, again, I'm 40, so when I was younger, everyone was wearing shell suits, so it reminded me of being a kid wearing a shell suit out.
Hopefully not as flammable, though. I hear they were pretty dangerous, those shell suits. It's really nice to know that you did mainly walking as well, and it's really interesting to know about the heavy pack as well. Do you know what kind of weight you had in there?
So I was training with 10.5 kilos up to about 12, because I used to do British Military Fitness years and years ago, and their mantra was always like train hard, fight easy. Try and do like harder training than what I'll experience in the race, and then it makes it easy when you get there. I remember listening to a couple of your interviews with Jasmine Paris and Damien Hall a while back, and they were talking about how they were essentially hikers and they would go out with heavy packs as part of their training, and that was like helped me double down on that as kind of a method for getting my training done as well.
Yeah, because I think that's really good advice from them, because it makes everything more achievable. Like, even if you're just going for a walk with your nan, with your kids, or with a partner that's maybe not as fit as you, you can just stick on a heavy pack and you can make your own training. You can make that work for you as training, can't you? All these little commutes and things. So that's really good. So, do you know sort of how many miles a week that you trained, or like, was there a specific amount of ascent that you aimed to?
I don't aim for a moment of ascent, but where I live again, morning walks are like down the valley, across the valley floor and back up, so like ascent is built in. At my peak I was doing 100 mile training weeks, but like, again, as I said, most of that, like 60-70 miles of that is walking the dog, so and then like a 20 mile hilly run, and then for the 10k hilly trail run. Most weeks I get maybe 60-70 miles done.
Was it just two runs a week then that you managed to?
I always chuckle to myself when I see people talking about like how to train for ultramarathons, like, oh, you have to run 6 days a week, and I'm like, is all I ever did.
Twice a week. That is really good. That is amazing, because I'm about to do the Lakeland 50 at the end of the month, and all I'm really doing is like 3 miles with Finley on the bike, jogging along very slowly every single day. So yeah, it's good to know that you can just do stuff on walking. Possibly you should walk a bit further than 3 miles, but you know, you've got to take what you can get.
Where I live, I've got lots of hills around me, so I get to do lots of like climbing, get my legs strong. People who live in flatter areas like London get to do more speed work and have more access to clubs, but you've just got to work with what you have and make the best of it.
Yeah, and have you ever had a coach, or did you just like listen to the advice that, you know, interviews on here and coach Tim and things like that?
Yeah, just watching YouTube. I like experimenting as well, so I like I'll watch podcasts or listen to podcasts, watch YouTube videos, and doing like hill sprints and intervals and just playing around with it and seeing what I enjoy and listening to my body as well. Like, you know, if I'm tired, if I had a coach I'm very competitive with myself, so I'd feel the need to go out and do a session rather than say I'm too tired, whereas kind of messing around myself, I get to say I'm too tired today and take a break.
Yeah, it's easier just to keep that within yourself. Yeah, totally understand that. And so, yeah, nutrition-wise, I see from your T-shirt that you're in the Vegan Runners. Is that a lifelong dietary observation, or has that come gradually as well?
It's come gradually. I've always been aware of like animal welfare, and I'd be the awkward person that would pull in a head to a restaurant and ask where they got their animal products from. And then a few years ago, 4 years ago, I think, I thought it's just enough. Like, it's becoming too awkward for everyone, and it was easy just to go vegan. And then at the same time, I was learning about the health benefits and the environmental benefits, and then like all three of those things just came together and worked really well. So, yeah.
Yeah. And what's the Vegan Runners like as a group?
Yeah, it's a massive club. Like, it's one of those. It's a massive club, but it's kind of virtual, so they have like local groups, but it's not like, you know, you turn up at such and such a run track once a week. Very supportive, and all the sort of regional groups also do meetups and stuff like that, so it's quite nice.
Oh, cool. And so did any of the other vegan runners go along to the Marathon de Sable with you?
No one directly that I knew, but I don't know if you're aware of Fiona, I'm assuming you do. One of the founders, so she was, I bumped into her on the plane on the way there. I wasn't expecting her to be there. So that was a wonderful surprise. Unfortunately, she was ill, so I think she dropped out on day one or two, which is a bit of a shame. But the queen of vegan runners was that Marathon de Sable.
Oh, amazing. Sorry, what did you say her name was? Fiona Oakes?
Fiona Oakes.
Oakes, yeah. Okay, I thought I heard you right. Yeah. Yeah, okay. And Neil Timms, who's watching live, says, another vegan runner here. So you've made a friend immediately here. He also says, please don't ask him about protein, Claire. I wasn't planning to ask about protein.
I was going to joke about that when you posted up with him and got any questions for Lloyd.
Yeah. No, I wasn't planning to ask you about protein because I know full well that it's very possible for vegans to get the full range of all the essential amino acids from a combination of lovely vegan foods, and indeed three or so are complete protein. So yeah, I wasn't planning to ask you about protein, but I was planning to ask you about what vegan snacks and meals did you take on MDS, because I know that you got to take all of your stuff and carry it from day one. So yeah, was it difficult to find? Like, I know that there's loads of stuff out there now, but yeah, what tickled your fancy food wise
Yeah, so I went back and forth. So there's a big debate about whether people take cookies and cook their food and eat their kind of dehydrated meals. In the end, I decided to go with essentially like milkshakes, meal replacement shakes, and then a set of snacks. And then for breakfast, I took basically I did overnight oats. Unfortunately, after day three, I couldn't eat my breakfast anymore because I think I put raisins in it to give a bit of like sweetness, and I think during the night they were fermenting.
So I was wandering along, like, that's a great mirage.
I couldn't eat it at all. So I was living on kind of meal replacement shakes, and then I would have things like salt and vinegar fava beans, spicy chickpeas. The last day I had a massive bag of Bombay mix, which I ended up eating on the rest of the day. So I just like eating away at that all day.
Yeah. So was that okay? Did you wish you'd taken anything different?
I wish I'd thought about the breakfast a bit more. I didn't think about the fermentation aspect. But other than that, the food worked really well. And so there's a rule that you have to take a minimum of 2,000 calories a day. I'm only 5'3", I'm a tiny little person. So I took the absolute minimum of calories, and I was worried that I'd be hungry because I eat quite a lot of food generally. But because you're drinking so much water, like you don't get hungry at all, so it was absolutely fine. And then sort of I think I managed to lose about 3 kilograms during the race. And then someone in our tent actually dropped 6 kilograms.
It's a win-win for every slightly overweight Western person.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good. Was that good to lose 3 kilograms? Were you wanting to do that, or You didn't have much, from the photos, you didn't look like you had much to lose in the first place.
Well, I planned on losing a couple of kilograms to go, just from the, you know, for every kilogram off your belly is a kilogram off your back sort of thing. Unfortunately, because of all the training with the backpack, I think I was under eating during training. So I'd end up having these like eating binges. I think you commented by chia charge bars the other day, and I had those in the house to take with me as well. And I would just go through too many of those in one session. Yeah. So I actually ended up putting on more weight ongoing. So basically the weight I lost during the race was cancelling out the weight I managed to put on before I left.
During training, yeah. I think that's probably a good thing, though.
You're training to eat enough food.
I think you should go to a long race like that, a little bit fat, because you might need it, you know? Like, your raisins might go off and you might not be able to eat your breakfast, so you never know what's going to happen. I think that's good.
Yeah.
But when you say milkshakes, what milk did you use? Because I know there's loads of different types, like hemp milk, soy milk, almond milk, oat milk. Which one did you go for?
Yeah, so it wasn't a milkshake. It was more a meal replacement shake. So I got meal replacement shakes from a company called ProteinWorks. I know there's others like Huel and various others, but yeah, I kind of like the ProteinWorks stuff. So that worked out quite well.
Yeah, ProteinWorks. Okay, so, well, we've mentioned protein again. Sorry about that, Neil. And Tadeusz as well, who's watching live, says he can't imagine bringing only the minimum amount of calories. But I have met Tadeusz at the Dean Valley races, and he's probably about twice the size of you, Lloyd, there. So I think he's, well, not the size, but the height.
Yes.
He's really, really tall. He's like a giant. So, yeah, I think he would need 3,000 calories a day, probably.
Yeah, it's the balancing act. Like, you can take more and like eat more food, feel more comfortable, but then you've got to carry it. So like the whole thing is like a balancing act of comfort versus weight to carry. Like, for example, a lot of people take sleeping mats sleep at night because you're sort of essentially sleeping on a rug on the desert floor. I decided to go without one and actually found it absolutely fine. But again, it might be that if you're, I'm quite a bad sleeper anyway, but some people might not feel like comfortable and get worse night's sleep, so it's better for them to take the extra weight of a sleeping mat, and yeah, everything's a compromise.
Yeah, definitely it is, isn't it? And I don't know, like, I'm terrible with sleep deprivation, so I'd probably go for like the increased sleep, but I'm also terrible with lack of food, so I'd probably go for like loads of food, I'd probably be that person with like a huge backpack going really slowly. But I've heard also that people, like, they swap food, don't they? They like they swap things for food, a bit like in prison. People are going around going, oh, I like the look of that, like, dried beef jerky or whatever it is, obviously not for you, and they swap things. Did you swap anything with anyone while you were out there?
I don't think I did. I think I shared some food because I couldn't eat the porridge, but as the only vegan in the tent as well, they were all enjoying like non-vegan snacks.
Okay, cooking their bacon there. Neil Timms seems to have done MDS. He took a sleeping mat to MDS and wished that he hadn't. And Hannah says she's a big fan of meal replacement shakes as well. She likes Huel, but she's yet to try the ProteinWorks ones. So she would like any flavour recommendations from you. But she says, please don't say vanilla. So don't say protein, don't say vanilla. There's a lot of censorship on this programme today.
Do you know what? I can't even remember because it was like, make the shake, knock it back. I did buy like all the flavours before I left and picked the ones. I think I'm basically trying to pick, even if I was less like the flavour, I think I'd take it just for the variety. So I think I'd like strawberry, banana, salted caramel, chocolate mint, things like that.
That sounds good. They should also do a beer flavour one, I think. A beer flavoured one, roast dinner flavoured one, veggie burger flavoured one. You know, they sound quite sweet.
The ProteinWorks ones tend to be on the sweet side of things.
Yeah.
But I had lots of salted nuts and things like that to cancel it out, so.
Yeah, so you had a mix of sweet and savoury. And gear-wise, we were just mentioning the sleeping mat. What kind of, did you have to buy lots of special kit to do the MDS?
So I bought, there's a backpack. You need one that's big enough, because obviously things like the 20 litre kind of normal running packs aren't big enough. I bought a sleeping bag to go, so the Om 1.6, is it? Something like that. And it's a very lightweight sleeping bag. So this year it was a heat wave while we were there.
Oh no, it's hot anyway. Really, how on earth do they have a heat wave?
I was really concerned about being cold at night.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I did some like practice runs in my house with the window open at night. It gets very cold in the desert. But because we had this heat wave, actually, I ended up sleeping on top of the sleeping bag anyway. Whereas the last year, it got very cold at night, so it was a very different situation. So I could have got away. I think your sleeping bag is mandatory, but I needn't have worried about being cold. Then just wore Hoover Speed Goat as the trainers, gaiters sewn onto them as well, stop the sand getting in.
Oh, actually sewn on?
Yeah, get Velcro sewed on. And,
oh, okay.
Just a vegan runner's top, bracing, and a pair of Ron Hill shorts and a pair of underwear. I took a spare pair of socks for day three onwards. Then with any other equipment, then most of your bag is your food, really. My bag came in at 7.5 kilos, mainly because I took my phone and a battery for it, because I wanted to take photos as well as that. It's not just a race, it's a big, you know, big lifetime adventure.
Yeah.
4 kilograms of that food, and then there's lots of other little bits you need to take, plus a signal mirror for helicopters, a venom pump. I didn't see any
snakes.
You didn't see any snakes? Not really. but I guess better safe than sorry.
Definitely. I think a venom pump is something that you're very glad not to have used or needed. Yeah. Just sorry, that it broke up a little bit when you said that the brand of shoes that you wore. Could you just tell us a bit more about those?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Hoka Speed Goats.
Hoka Speed Goats. Okay, yeah. Was that the fours or did you have the new fives by then?
I had the fives. Basically, I bought the fours from Sports Direct on a, you know, they did a sale. Wore them for a run around the sand dunes locally. I thought, these are perfect. I'm going to go and buy another pair and then keep them in the box ready for the race. Unfortunately, sold out. So I had the fives to do the race in, but they're very, very similar. So
Yeah, and nice and bouncy. Did you find that, because they've got good grip, haven't they, the Hoka Speed Goat fives and fours. Did you find that they gave you good contact between the ground and the foot? They weren't too padded for you?
They were actually fine. I used them in a few ultras on the build up, so I was quite used to them. I'm usually more of an A6 person for trail running. But everyone was going with hookers, because you got to think about like whether they'll hold up to the heat as well. And people were racing in speed goats, so I knew they were safe there. So
yeah.
And then you're running on mainly like hard ground or soft sand, so like when you've got grip, it doesn't really make that much difference.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so yeah, what is the terrain like then? Because I tend to think of it as just like running on a beach the entire time, but of course you get lots of different types of beach, don't you? What's it like underfoot?
You've got everything from like really, really soft sand dunes where you put your foot in and sink back like a meter every step, A lot of it was like rocky terrain, almost like running on like a hard trail in the UK. There was dried riverbeds that were like running across like broken pottery almost. And then the soft sand, like running on like a beach when the tide's gone out here. So lots and lots of different types of terrain.
Okay, and what was the scenery like? Because I tend to think, oh, it's just the desert, it'll be the same every day, it'll be really boring. Did it change a lot, or was it dramatic?
It was very dramatic. There was a couple of days when we climbed over the mountains, which were just absolutely amazing. And, you know, you would look at a sand dune going up the side of a mountain, and you'd notice these tiny dots at the top that were people, and then huge sort of flat river valleys, which were really deceptive, because you'd think that, like, the next checkpoint was maybe 2K away, and it would just always be 2K away.
Yeah.
Oh, 5 grand.
Yeah.
This scenery was absolutely, it was kind of like desolate, I think a lot of people describe it as when you see the pictures from Mars.
Mm.
It's very similar to that.
But
absolutely, like, I was still fortunate to be able to go there.
Yeah. And did you take lots of photos then with your camera and your battery?
I took as many as I could. I'm hoping at some point my wife's going to put together I made a video for my kids every morning.
Oh.
And took lots of photos, so hopefully we'll get to put those together and put those on YouTube at some point.
Oh, yeah, that would be great. Yeah, it would be awesome to see those, and awesome for you to share them with the patron group as well. So it sounds like you had a great time and that everything went really, really well. Were there any hard parts? Like, did you get blisters? Did you suffer from any low points?
Yeah, definitely. I was talking about those videos. By day 5, you get very emotional. So I was like, every time I was making a video for my kids, I would just be like, blurting out tears.
Oh, that's so
and trying to force out words. The stage I was really looking forward to. The day 1 was interesting because you're kind of like just getting used to it and things like that. Day 2 was absolutely beautiful. There was lots of climbing in it, so that's kind of where I really enjoyed myself. But I was really looking forward to the long stage, so that was 9K this year. The dropout rate in the marathon start this year, normally it's sort of 5-10%. This year it was 30%, so really, really high dropout rate.
Is that because of the heat wave?
So normally what happens is you get mostly dropouts between 1 and 2 and then maybe some on the long day. But this year, like every day, there was more and more dropouts.
Really?
The long stage, I kind of pushed it a bit too hard during the day, I think. So I was like, it's okay, I'm running into the night, it'll get cooler, and I'll cool down, and I'll be okay. But the temperature never really seemed to drop. And so I was sort of on the edge of overheating, I think, the entire night. So that was really quite a struggle to get going. It's like when you look at your watch, and you've got kind of another 40 kilometers to go, and you're not in a good place. But it was a case of head down, keep chugging your water, and then every time I get to a checkpoint, I'll have maybe 10 minutes sit down and then get up and go because it needs too long.
Yeah, beware the chair. Yeah. And so did you have anything, like, what made you just keep going? Is that just something about you, or did you have like a specific mantra that you repeated to yourself, or were you doing it for your kids, or like what was it that just kept you going?
I'm quite tight, so maybe I just wanted to get
explanation.
One of the things I kind of, I think anyone that does ultras kind of prides themselves on their mental strength. And I said at the start, I'd done races to make sure I could get through it. So I'd done that 100, and once you do things like a 100-mile race, like any problem in the world seems much easier because you're like, I got through that, I can get through anything in life.
Yeah, I think 100-mile races are like a man's version of childbirth, maybe. Like, once you've done that, you can do anything, can't you?
Yes, having witnessed childbirth, yeah, you can definitely do anything. and just in case, like, as hard as it is, I know I'm going to get through this, you just have to keep going, and eventually it'll get easier, and eventually it does, even if the easier is the finish line.
Yeah, you make it sound so simple. You're also selling it to us really well. Tadeusz says
it's the most amazing adventure, like, seriously.
Yeah, well, today she says that makes MDS sound appealing. I presumed it was just flattish sand dunes for most of it, which is what I thought as well, to be fair. Although you do see those amazing pictures of the Mars-like landscape, don't you? And there's always those big sand dune, little trains of people with the camels at the end.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, there's a lot of flat running, but like things like Jebel Akhtar, which is the big mountain there, like there's ropes you have to pull yourself up to climb up, and it's on, you're pulling yourself up a rope, up a sand dune, up a big mountain, in the middle of Sahara Desert, in the middle of the day, like, and you get up on top, and you're, there's lots of ridges to run and stuff like that, so there's lots of views, and it's very beautiful.
Yeah, it does sound really beautiful, but it does sound really hot as well. Like when I was running in Costa Rica, it was like running in an oven with a hot hairdryer blowing on you. Was that a similar experience?
It was, yeah. I think at one point I was making a video for the kids, and I said it's like when the wind wasn't blowing, it was really, really hot, and then you like pray for the wind to blow, and then when it did blow, it was like a hand dryer in your face. Yeah, and you get back to the tent at night, and it's sort of stripped down to my shorts, and I would just, you would lay there sort of heavy breathing, not because you're out of breath or tired, it was literally your body trying to keep yourself cool, like panting like a dog almost, and you'd do that from like 1 o'clock in the afternoon to 8 o'clock at night, and then you eventually did cool down.
Wow.
So it was incredibly hot.
That's so hot, and I bet you were really glad of doing all that heat training beforehand with the getting in the hot bath and the wearing the heat suit and putting all the heat on in your car, because you kind of mentally prepared yourself to cope with that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it was kind of different, I think, but it did, yeah, it must have got my body ready, like to sweat and to be like physically prepared, but like mentally it was a very, very different for what you were racing in.
It sounds really hard. I think that's the bit I'd struggle with there, but it does sound absolutely amazing race. Have you got any, like, having done it once, would you do it again?
Unfortunately, one of my friends who I'd done a lot of the training with dropped out on after day three. It was just too hot for them. And so they had planned to go back in 2025 to kind of get it done.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, I was like, well, I'll do all the training with you, to make sure, you know, the same as we've done the training this time. And it was like, well, I'm going to do all the training. And I may as well. So this year they're making some quite big changes to the MDS.
Okay.
They're making it slightly shorter and changing some of the rules. So we're going to see how it pans out this year as to whether we do it next year in 2025 or maybe pick a different big challenge.
Yeah, well, the Coastal Challenge in Costa Rica is a really good one if you like a hot race.
I'm not sure I like a hot race. Bring your in, maybe.
Yeah, it's not as well known. So if you want to do something that, you know, like everyone in the street knows what it is, the MDS is like the original adventure race, isn't it? The original multi-day ultra run. And there's a picture that you sent me of you at the start and you at the finish holding your medal, which looks really amazing. But it looks like you've got like some sore bit on your nose. What happened there?
Yeah. So in the desert, you get quite a lot of sand and dust. The sand is very, very fine. So obviously it's just breaking down and breaking down constantly. So a lot of it hangs in the air once it gets churned up. And at the end of the long day, I just started getting really bad nosebleeds.
Oh, no.
And because you're carrying everything you got that you need to survive, like you wouldn't got sitting like toilet paper on you. So I was kind of cramming toilet paper up my nose as little as I could get away with. But yeah, just had constant nosebleeds. And then they hit me again at the end of the marathon stage. So the photo you saw was right at the end, but as I was coming to the finish line, I knew people might be watching, so I had the final bits of my water to try and wash all the blood off. They want people seeing me finishing covered in blood, but yeah, there's quite a lot of blood coming out of me, and quite a few other people as well, so it's one of those don't know when can you get there.
Because you wouldn't know that would affect you like that until you got there. And were you okay afterwards, so did it all cleared up?
Yeah, it was just like the friction of of just the air going in and out. A couple of days later, it was all fine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's an incredible achievement. Like, what are you most proud of with your Marathon de Sable experience?
Finishing it, I guess, was great. So I'm not an elite runner. You put in quotes normal, but I would consider myself a normal runner. Like, I don't go out and do speed sessions and track sessions, but I'd see those people as proper runners. One thing I was quietly proud of is that on the last day, they have the top 200 runners start 2 hours after everyone else. I started the elite pack of the hardest race in the world, which was with my little well done myself. Couldn't believe I did it.
Wow. That's incredible. So you were in the top 200.
Yeah, I think the final spot was like 170th, I think, in the entire race.
Wow.
But I didn't go out there to sort of compete or anything. I just planned, run when you feel like it, walk when you don't, that kind of mantra. It was quite surprised to come do that well, really.
Amazing. Oh, that's amazing. 170th-ish with only 2 runs a week and a lot of walking. I think that's really inspirational for everybody. And so possibly MDS again, but have you got anything else planned over the summer and later this year?
So I'm going to do the Drury's Challenge with X Energy again.
Oh, I love that race.
Bad back on day two, so I got to the finish and they tried to give me a medal and I was like, I haven't done all 3 days, I'm going to come back next year, so keep that promise. And sign up for the Atlantic Coast Challenge as well in October.
Oh, I've always wanted to do that one. That looks great. Is that along the Pembrokeshire Coast Path or?
No, it's on
the Southwest Coast Path, is it?
Cornwall.
Oh, is it the Southwest Coast Path?
Yeah, it's the kind of sister race to the Jurassic Coast Challenge, which I'd also like to do one day. And then next year, I'm like 90% sure I'm going to try the Wild Horse, the Cross South Wales.
Yeah, so quite a few things planned, kind of in the Walesy kind of southwest area.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to get up the lakes at some point as well, because all your videos from up there look absolutely gorgeous. So.
Yeah, oh, it is a really great place. I must admit that it's one of my favourite places. But I did really like the UTS Snowdonia when I did that recently.
Yeah,
last
it's
month.
A gorgeous one there as well.
Yeah.
I did the 1000 on my 4th birthday.
Nice.
Last year. What a great way to celebrate birthday.
Yeah, that's such a great way to celebrate a birthday. Yeah, I think I had a young child, so that wasn't possible. but I did do a little bit of stalking of you, and I think I found the right person on Twitter. It says that you are the creator of Scuba Santas. Is that you?
Yes, that is me.
What is Scuba Santas? Because you'll be doing that in December.
No, I finished doing that many years ago. In the past, I used to scuba dive, and I created a world record-breaking scuba diving event near Christmas where everyone dressed up in Father Christmas outfits and all dived at the same time. And the record we had was 200 or 300 and something. I can't quite remember now. It was a cool little charity/world record event.
Oh, amazing. Oh, that's so cool. So do you still scuba dive now then?
No, that was one of the things that I used to do. Mm-hmm. I still went on my gear a while back. Just didn't have the time to do it anymore.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of thing that needs regular practice where it's, running, I could put on my shoes and go out the door.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a bit cold to practice it in the UK, isn't it, really? You need to go on lots of holidays.
It's a good excuse to go on lots of holidays, yeah, but I did enjoy diving around Plymouth. There's lots of shipwrecks, so it's kind of hobby.
Oh, that's awesome. Did you run with a torch at some point, like a relay with a torch, or was that not you?
Yeah. So, yeah. Um, well, So last year it was part of the Running Out of Time Climate Relay.
That's it. I thought it was you.
Yeah, that was the one from COP26. I think it was in Glasgow or Edinburgh. Edinburgh down to Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt. And then literally on Sunday, I was involved in the second one that's currently running now, and it's going to be heading, I think they're in Bristol at the moment, and they're going to be heading towards London, and that's from Ben Nevis to Big Ben, to raise awareness of the climate crisis that we're going through. And there's little stages if you're in that part of the world to get involved in. I ran three stages this year, which is 25 kilometers. It just happens to go through my area every year, so I can't not be involved.
Yeah, oh, that's a great thing to be involved with. And like, I suppose I asked Damien this question as well, but like, how do you reconcile your environmental sort of ethics with going to a race like the MDS? Like, do you offset, or do you just be like, right, well, it's only one race a year? Like, how do you cope with those sort of feelings of guilt that we all have these days?
Yeah, that's a good question. So obviously, through my diet, I save a lot of environmental impact. I also work for a great company called Olio, which is all about reducing the impact of food waste. So like, my day job is also like saving the world, I guess.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'll have to look up Olio.
We grow our own, a lot of our own food and things like that, so we're quite environmentally conscious and we offset our carbon impact. It was kind of... the elephant in the room in terms of doing this race, but it's a one-off. But also they do sort of work quite hard at their environmental impact. Like they've changed up how they do water, so all the water bottles are recycled. There was lots of like environmental initiatives from Marathon Start this year, which I was really happy to see. And they are trying as well. They're trying to become carbon neutral as a race. So
amazing. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, you can't just stop doing these things. Like Damien Hall, he went to Barclay Marathons, and so did Jasmine Paris, and you know, and they have to constantly, don't they? Because they're like big profiles on Instagram, they have to constantly justify that to everybody. But yeah, there's just it's just one of the big things, isn't it? That people see and they go, "You fly."
Yeah, it's not about what you do like 1% of your life. It's what you do the other 99% of time. So if you're making the right choices and reducing your impact, then, you know, the odd thing you do now and again isn't really useful to live, you know, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And it's probably a drop in the ocean compared to big industries. So wearing your running kit for a long time is probably going to help way more. Brilliant. Yeah. Well, it's been really great to hear about your experience. It's been so nice of you to share that with us, Lloyd. Must mention again, Lloyd is a very loyal patron, so thank you very much for that. And it's just great to hear about the MDS. I think you've sold it to me. I feel like if they rang me and said, "Oh, would you like a journalist place on this race?" then I'd be like, "Oh yeah, it sounds really great now." So how can everyone follow you or find out more about your upcoming challenges? If you want people to follow you, that is.
I'm very creatively have accounts around all the social media of my name, so Lloyd Watkin, no S everywhere. I guess I mainly post on Instagram these days, so it's probably the best place to find me. And I should say, although it wasn't like my main aim for Marathon Stop, I did raise money for a charity, Hope for Children's. They're a very small charity where not many overheads, so a lot of the money goes directly into projects, so even raising a small amount makes a big difference to a lot of children's lives as well. On that note, Instagram, Strava, Twitter, it's all the thing.
Oh, amazing. And I saw that you went around doing talks as well to all the kids that had some fundraising for you, didn't they?
Yes, they did. That was really lovely of them. I went to talk at my kids' school, primary school, mainly because I wanted to do the trans world sport for them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like be what you had on telly as a kid,
I was very, like, very much pushing the message, like, this isn't about me and then look at me, this is amazing. Like, I'm just like you kids, and, like, in 20 years, you could be doing something amazing if you really want to and try hard.
Yeah.
And that's the message. My 5-year-old told me it was really boring. She said it's really belly daddy, but the 11-year-old absolutely loved it and all his friends did, so I didn't embarrass him too much. So.
Yeah. That's the ultimate accolade, isn't it? Yeah, it was boring, Daddy. Oh, well, I think that's great. It's amazing that you A, did it, B, raised loads of money for charity, and C, that you even think of doing it again for your friend. So that's really awesome. Thank you very much. It was really fantastic to chat to you today. And yeah, wishing you all the best for the summer.
Cool. Thanks very much. Lovely to speak to you as well.
Brilliant. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.